Welcome to the 15 Past 15 podcast. Our guest today is Dr. Bettina Zorn, curator of the East Asia Collection at the Weltmuseum Wien in Vienna. The East Asia Collection comprises approximately 28,500 objects. Interestingly, the majority of these objects were collected in the 19th century, so exactly the period we have been talking about a lot in this podcast. So can you tell us a bit how all these objects ended up in Vienna?
Yes. So, of course, there are a variety of sources. They were either requested by the curator to mostly diplomatic staff working in that region, in Shanghai or in Tokyo at that time. We also do have collections by individuals, by travelers. And, for instance, in the case of Japan, when Japan was participating in the World Exhibition in 1873 in Vienna, they sent about 6,000 objects to Austria. But these are samples of sources on how this collection was built up.
You mentioned Japan sent 6,000 objects. How many objects did China send?
This is an interesting question, and you have to consider the different positions China and Japan took towards the participation in a world exhibition. So Japan themselves, with the help of some translators and experts from Europe, they built up this exhibition according to a catalog sent by the committee from Vienna to the invited countries. But China, for instance, the Imperial China with the emperor, did not actively participate in the World Exhibition, but on the other hand, they were organized by the foreigners, mainly by the consuls who had a network all over the country with the ports. And this catalog I mentioned, which was the same catalog for all invited nations. So according to that catalog, the network of this diplomatic corps was organizing products from China. And the objects in our collection from the Boxer Rebellion, they were given as a present to the Austrian-Hungarian emperor by his marine detachment, who was asked for help, and they entered China from the coast and went towards the hunting palace south of Beijing, where, together with the Russians, they took the objects during the Boxer Rebellion.
Can you describe one of the objects that ended up in Vienna at that time?
Yes. The key object of the new China Gallery is this lacquer screen paravent, part of which the throne is in the Victor and Albert Museum via the Russian army. So it's a huge object which we know that Qianlong, it's dated to Qianlong period, which we know that Qianlong has been given to asked to be worked on as a gift to his mother turning 80. This paravent then was taken out of that hunting palace, Nanheizi, south of Beijing, and given already to the Austrian emperor in the year 1902, and at that time already ended up in the museum.
So this is then one object where you can already beautifully trace different trajectories of the past. And I think this also applies to the Japan collection. There, the key object also tells a lot about perceptions of the past.
Yes, exactly. I found it fascinating, and it puzzled me a long time because I was not sure about the intention. Well, I'm still not sure about the intention, but now it's my view on that object, because the key object in the Japan, in the new Japan gallery, is a huge house model about less than 15 square meters of daimyo residency. The daimyo are the feudal lords who, together about 260, who together with the shogun reigned over at that time Edo period Japan. So the daimyo were asked by the shogun to keep residence in the capital Edo. And I was puzzled because 1873, so this is the beginning of the new era, the Meiji period, and the shogunate is not anymore something actual for Japan, as the emperor returned to the capital, Tokyo. And I was wondering why at the beginning of this new period, Japan sent something which is more attached to an old period. And I was wondering, and
so an object symbolizing the past.
Exactly, symbolizing its own Japanese past. And thinking back, I found maybe a solution for this. Imagining that Vienna at that time, let's say 70 to 72, the city of Vienna was being rebuilt. There was an ongoing creation of new cities and enlarging of cities. Of course, London and Paris in the first half of the 19th right. century, but it was continuing. And in at that time, it was happening in Vienna. So, of course, the committee in Vienna was interested to see how the new city dwellings looked like. That's why they put this on as a category.
I see.
And of course, for Japan, it was also in the new period, but not yet so far in remolding the city, Edo becoming Tokyo. But by function, these city dwellings by daimyos were comparable, to my understanding, to this new city palace in Vienna. That's why I think Japan sent something which was already passed for Japan by political meaning.
I see. So it was not Japanese idea to represent its own past, but more to show wealth in building.
And I think to find the equivalent, because it's always the problem of have to find the equivalent what another culture, another period, of course, for both nations, for Austria, Hungary, and for Japan, it is a kind of new push towards city development. But the one already did the first step, and Japan was in the beginning of that step. So they still had to refer to the old past period.
So the daimyo residence could also be seen as a typical example of translation.
Yes, exactly.
And another question that is very interesting for us is how to communicate this to a broader audience, in your case, in the museum. So let's take the example of your latest exhibition in the newly opened Weltmuseum. How do you deal with these questions?
By structure, we were in a strong frame of using limited words to explain a very complex topic by breaking down from a bigger text to a small text. You really have to find a line to combine the objects, which means for the visitor visiting the gallery from the beginning to the end. Of course, not everybody is doing this. On the other hand, we included a lot of media, and the media provide some possibility for deepening some questions. Hopefully, we are able to enlarge this media pool.
Can you give one concrete example how you make use of media?
Maybe let's take the cartoon culture, the manga. Cartoon or manga do have a long tradition in East Asia. And I wanted to follow up the manga tradition up to the 21st century. So I'm using this as an explanation in media, how the depiction of manga characters are used in the anime film. for instance. So you can follow up, and you even can recognize something from the 17th century reproduced in an anime film from 2015.
Then in a way, that would also be to make the connection between your collection, which is a historical collection,
yes,
to the present. And there is also a connection to a older past, right? Because the collection comes, most of it is a 19th century collection, but not all items
exactly
are from the
19th
yes century.
Yes, yes, yes.
So how do you deal with that? How do you bring this into your story?
Yes, yes. I'm again referring to my key object, the house model of the daimyo residence, which is dating to an Edo period, produced in the beginning of the Meiji period, but with the old features of an Edo period house, residency of a daimyo. And my idea was, as the collection's objects still are dated to Edo period, which means 18th, mostly 18th and the beginning of the 19th century. So I'm using this in the Japan Gallery for illustrating Edo period life on one hand, and on the other hand, in contrast, I'm already pointing out the differences and the developments starting with the Meiji period and the interaction Japan and Europe by objects both directions.
And if I remember correctly, in the China collection room,
yes,
the older objects have a different meaning.
Yes, I'm again referring to my key object in the China gallery, which is, as I would say, dividing the gallery into two parts. The part in front, the reddish carved lacquer green with the Taoist picture of Xi Wangmu's birthday. And on the other side, the darker one reflecting to the Boxer Rebellion, the period when Europe looked at China differently. So this is the other part of the gallery.
These have been a number of very interesting examples of how we frame the past, of how we look at the past, especially the past in a transcultural perspective. How do you see a collection like yours can help us to improve a general understanding of what was going on in this period, in the 19th century, but also how can it help us to think about the past?
Yes, I think I forgot to mention that the aim of the new galleries was to use the collection and to find a historical moment where the collection of a region is linked to the history of Austria or Vienna in general. So this is the main line through all the storytelling in the gallery. One of my students who did an internship in the museum asked another student from Japan how she felt represented in my new Japan gallery. And I was astonished that an Austrian student is asking a Japanese student whether she found herself in this gallery, because I thought this was not my intention. My idea was first, firsthand, that us, we Austrians living and whose past it is, should know more on what was going on from our reaction. I wanted to stress about our part being involved in that story.
And now, after having heard this question, do
yes
you think more about the East Asian audience too?
So still, I would like to inform the people living in Austria about the historical event they were involved in acting with the other culture.
Thank you very much for sharing all this with us.
I And so, as Benjamin Britten's Sinfonia de Requiem fades away, we bring this first series of 15 past 15 to a close. Sinfonia de Requiem itself gets to the heart of uses of the past between East Asia and Europe, but that must be a story for another day.
For the time being, we thank you for listening, for your feedback, and especially our interviewees for lending us their time. Most of all, we thank our wonderful colleagues at the Historisches Seminar in the University of Zurich for helping us produce this podcast and everyone who helped publicize it.
All being well with time and funding, Birgit and I will be back for a second series of 15 past 15 in January 2020. And in series two, we'll do our best to avoid the background sounds of ambulances, cars, drop pencils, and all the other little side effects which we're sure have enhanced your listening experience.
If you have any questions in the meantime or suggestions for future interviews, please send us an email. Thank you.